Black Talk Radio Network is made possible in part with help from the Black Talk Media Project, a North Carolina-based nonprofit engaged in the production and distribution of independent digital black media. Find out more by going to blacktalkradionetwork.com or blacktalkmediaproject.org and look for the menu tab, Crowdfunding Black Media. Black Talk Media Project, helping to provide you with new black media for the new millennium. Opinions expressed by callers, guests, and hosts do not necessarily reflect those of the Black Talk Radio Network and Black Talk Media Project. Black Talk Radio is new black media for the new millennium. Tuned in to Black Talk Radio News. My name is Scotty Reed, broadcasting from behind the enemy lines of USA Inc. Hope that my voice finds you safe and relatively sound behind these enemy lines. I tell you, what does that mean when they say relative safety? And yeah, I guess they talking about a sound mind or something, but you know, that's kind of something what we might be talking about today, because in terms of post-traumatic stress disorders, post-traumatic slave syndrome, you know, the field of psychiatry keeps coming up with new terms, and these researchers are doing research, and so there is a lot of reason to suspect that a lot of black folks and other marginalized folks are not of a sound mind. So I hope you're doing as well as possible behind these enemy lines. So welcome to today's broadcast of Black Talk Radio News. Today's day is June 3rd, 2016. Of course, it is what, Friday, about to head into the weekend. One of the most dangerous times behind these enemy lines is on weekend, because usually, you know, people let their guards down, they're relaxing, and they may be partaking of substances that may put them at a disadvantage and what have you. So yeah, dangerous period. We hope that as you head into this weekend, you will use all precaution. Just always exercise battlefield awareness. We do have a special guest planned to join us today. It's always a pleasure when we talk to one of our elders, one of our veteran freedom fighters, and we'll be talking to a veteran of the Black Panther Party, Mr. Omar Barber, who in 1967, just 1 year after the founding of the Black Panther Party in Oakland, California, by Bobby Seale and Huey P. Newton, may he rest in power. But Mr. Barber, at the age of 15 years old, a year after the founding of the Panthers, joined up. And this October will commemorate 50 years since the founding of the Black Panther Party in 1966, the year I was born. You know, I like to think of the year I was born. You know how the Chinese say the year of the dragon and all that. I was born in the year of the Panther, 1966, just a month later in November. So Mr. Barber is an economic specialist in the nonprofit sector, and he is leading the planning for the upcoming golden anniversary of the founding of the Black Panther Party. And we definitely want to hear from him, just get some, if he would share with us some of his personal thoughts on his experiences as a young black male behind these enemy lines in 1967, and what have you during that time period, what attracted him to the Panthers, what kind of work was he involved in, because they had many different programs, ways for people to contribute to uplifting their community, helping their community become self-reliant and not rely, you know, on the government or anyone else. So definitely looking forward to speaking with him. Of course, you can make a financial contribution, and you should, to help with the commemoration anniversary. The National Alumni Association of the Black Panther Party, you can go to the website. That is www.naabpp. So that's NAAB as in black, PP, Panther Party, .org. We have a link to it for those on blacktalkradionetwork.com right now on the broadcast page for today's program. You can click that link. It'll take you right to the website. So please make a financial contribution as they there's also an Indiegogo link there for you if you want to make a contribution, and all contributions and donations are tax deductible. The NAABPP has 501c3 nonprofit status. Now, as I was reading that, I was thinking today. Now, think about that. Think about what the United States government is admitting here by granting an association of Black Panther members, alumni, granting them 501c3 nonprofit status when, what, 30, 40, 50 years ago? In the 1960s, 70s, 80s, the United States government was targeting this very same organization in illegal activities known as COINTELPRO. I mean, think about that. Think about that. And now, all these years later, you know, the federal government is acknowledging that, you know, these aren't bad people at all, as we was trying to convince you. They're not terrorists at all. They're, no. So, I mean, just think about that. And then think about the fact that we got members of the party still in prison, set up. I was just reading something about the hidden FBI files pertaining to Ed Poindexter, part of the Omaha 2, but the other half, his government name was David Rice. Man, I'm forgetting his name right now. Mondo Wielenga passed away earlier this year. So they're acknowledging, you know, these people, all they were doing is trying to help people and uplift their community, and we targeted them and whatnot. So now, you know, they're back engaged in work, and we're trying to reach out to the youth and whatnot, and we think that's worthy of a 501c3 nonprofit status. I tell you, this government, man, I tell you. So, looking forward to speaking to him. After we speak to Mr. Barber, I want to take a look at this study that is suggesting what it's really a theory. So you have to be careful of news headlines, as I talk about all the time, no matter who's writing them. You know, they can be a little misleading, sometimes they could be outright lies. And so there's this article that's kind of semi-viral going around on social media that's talking about this study found that Black people in the United States DNA has been changed due to slavery. Now, when you go and you read the article and you read some of the quotes from the people involved in the study, you find that no, they did not find that that Black people's DNA has been quote unquote changed due to slavery. But it does sound like they are proposing this theory because of something they found related to a gene that's related to fear. We'll get into the details as much as possible as later, but it seems that they are saying that slavery produced mutant Black folks. So y'all excuse me if I'm kind of skeptical, but then when I'm reading words that say we believe, or, you know, that tells me that isn't a fact. We believe this, we think that there's evidence to suggest this, but we don't have any, you know, evidence to definitely say that black people are in the United States are mutants compared to other black people around the world. So, I mean, we're going to take a look at that. Let me leave it like that. We'll take a look at that. And if I have time, Donald Trump is, of course, going to be in the news a lot, as he already has been for the past year. But it is seems like the corporate media, as well as, you know, left-wing media, liberal media, these different groups that run propaganda operations, they're going after Donald Trump right now involving his civil case about Trump University might have been a fraud or this and that. And that's very possible. I, you know, really haven't taken an interest in the case because, you know, Donald Trump is a demagogue. And so, you know, not really interested in him, period. I do pay attention to what he's saying, but, I'm not going to look up to see, dig into this and spend hours trying to figure out if he committed fraud through Trump University. I'll let the courts continue to handle that. But what I'm not seeing is the headlines talking about the Clinton Foundation perpetrating $100 million fraud. The Global Clinton Foundation and been operating since the 1990s, I think 97, started as the Clinton Library and all of that. Now they're pushing quote unquote HIV AIDS medicine around the world. There's allegations that the medicine may have been watered down, if you will, adulterated. So lots of fraud going on there, according to financial records, according to this known whistleblower who looks at the records of different companies or whatnot to see if they are engaged in fraud. And he is making an allegation and said he has talked to the U.S. government, the authorities involved, about bringing criminal charges against the Clinton family. That would be Bill, that would be Hillary, and that would be Chelsea. He talks about the same things that the Haitians are talking about when the Clinton Foundation came over there for the Haitian earthquake relief and all of that. They ripped off a lot of that money. Haitians, when the primary, Democratic primary was in New York, Haitians were protesting outside of her offices. But you didn't see a whole lot of mainstream coverage about that. And so this guy's saying that there's evidence that these people are correct, that the bulk of that money did not go to help any Haitians, that it went into the bank accounts of people associated with the Clinton Foundation. So definitely want to take a look at that. Now, let me check my email. We should have heard from Mr. Barber by now, but I may have to call him myself. If that's the case, I do believe he sent a number for me. And his story just alone, his story is very interesting. Again, at the age of 16, joining the Black Panther Party in 1967. So let me see if I can ring him up. So y'all bear with me as I do. Oh, I think this is him joining us now. Oops. Did not mean to hang up on that. Let me see if I can open it up. I think this is Mr. Barber now. Greetings. Who do we have on the line?
This is Omar Barber from the National Alumni Association, the Black Panther Party.
Good afternoon to you, sir. It is a pleasure to speak with you.
Likewise, Scotty.
Mr. Barber, I linked to your bio. I was just before you called in was talking about just your story itself is very, very interesting. Your level of commitment to the community is commendable. Do you have a biography out?
No.
You don't. Okay. All right. So, but we do want to ask you some questions related to that, and also, of course, bring you on to talk about the 50th anniversary of the black founding of the Black Panther Party, the golden anniversary, and the fundraising that's going on to make sure that is a successful event. So if you don't mind, if I could ask you some personal questions.
Well, I'm on the line, Scott, so shoot.
All right, thank you. Now, Your bio says that you joined in 1967, a year after the founding, at the age of 15 years old. As a 15-year-old, what was it about the party, or what was it about conditions in your community that led you to join, or was it a combination of those things?
Well, like a lot of my contemporaries at that time, I was heavily influenced by the Nation of Islam. I grew up in New York, grew up in Queens and Harlem, so I had a chance to see the late Al-Hajj Malik Shabazz when he was in his glory, speaking on 7th Avenue and 25th Street. So we were all revolutionized by just being in Malcolm's presence and hearing his speeches and you know, seeing the nation and how the brothers dressed. So we were influenced by that. But we also was also had reserves about joining the nation because of the very strict discipline and stuff they had. And we were still also living on the streets. A lot of us were still into gangster and doing things that, you know, may not have been in the best interest of us or our communities, but we adhered to the message. And I think that what mostly influenced us is when the Panthers came along, we knew a lot of brothers who had been in the street doing things. They became very upset and they started talking about the need to defend ourselves from the way police was treating us, especially when people got arrested and stuff. That was sort of my formative years of getting into the party. And I dropped out of high school, went to had the very good fortune of going to Harlem Preparatory School, which was one of the early street academies in New York under the great leadership of the late Dr. Edward Carpenter, a real fine educator. That's why I first was introduced to Dr. Ben Johanan and learning something about our history. So the confluence of a lot of things coming together, Republic of New Africa, and that influence was very heavy at that time. So it was a conscious reasoning that got us directed toward the party. And once we all saw what happened in Sacramento, when Bobby and little Bobby Hutton and other Panthers and the Douglas went to the Capitol, as one of the Douglas like to say, went to the Capitol packing, that told us right there and then it's time to make a change. And we just ran and joined the Black Panther Party in the Harlem chapter at that point, Harlem and Jamaica chapters.
Wow. How did your parents feel about it?
Well, it's interesting because my mother, who was we're from the South originally. I was actually born in Roanoke, Virginia, also known as the Star City of the South. Some people would debate that, but that's my hometown nonetheless. And my mother was a very active, involved person with the NAACP, as was my grandmother. So even my household, there was always an activist streak. Also, my mother was mulatto. She was half white, half black, so she had a great sense of what prejudice was. And she would be able to move among the white world as a white woman and see a lot of things and hear anything. So she knew firsthand some of the institutional racism that exists, and she was not against that. And she was very supportive of black institutions, especially the churches, very supportive of black entertainers and celebrities, and felt that we needed to give those people our support and respect. And so, you know, jazz was an influential part of my household, jazz music, celebrating people like Ethel Waters and Dorothy Dandridge. You know, she looked to those women and men as being great, and Paul Robeson was one of her champions. So I was imbued with that. My father was sort of a country guy, and a man of very little words, but he spoke volumes when he did speak, and used it very short and to the point, and always had a philosophical bent to it. And he grew up in Franklin County, Virginia, which is the home, believe it or not, of the late Booker T. Washington. And Franklin County was known as the driest county in the world because that's where they did the moonshining. So that's also very influential in my upbringing too, because there was an Upper Mill Street there as well. So I grew up in a household who came from the South, came to the North. There was my aunt at the time who is the first time I heard the word UNITA, which is a short for the United Negro Improvement Association. I had an aunt who was very involved with the Marcus Davis movement. And so that all influenced me. So when I became a Panther, I was already steeped into black life, black history, what we need to do as a people, what self-pride meant. We refer to ourselves as people of color as opposed to colored people. So I joined the party. I was already ready to make the change.
You already had those activist grassroots.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Let me ask you this question. Because the reason I asked that question is because from my studies, I know about COINTELPRO. I also know about the American news media's role in COINTELPRO in demonizing the Panthers with propaganda, you know, through the newspapers, through the television, through the radio, and what have you. So early on, at that time when you joined the Panthers in 1967, how prevalent was that propaganda warfare being waged against the Panthers? And because, you know, somebody else who doesn't have the activist grassroots that you have running in your family, they may believe those reports and be concerned about their teenage son joining, you know, this organization that as H. Rap Brown called it, White People's Papers, is calling a terrorist gang or whatever, you know, labels they were using at the time. So what was media like at that early point? Had the demonization and effort, you know, began yet?
Well, more so than at that point, because don't forget that Mopin was heavily demonized.
Right.
In fact, the word militant was applied to him very often, especially by the Eastern establishment, which was a way of saying that there was something crazy or outlandish about him.
Violent.
Like, you know?
Yeah, violent.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. So when they start talking about the Panthers, and my father did take issue with that, but he even took issue with the fact that I stopped eating pork at a very early age, and he told me if I couldn't eat what was on his table, that I didn't eat. Well, you know, that was my first metamorphosis when I decided not to eat some had very good pork with red-eye gravy and biscuits and apples, and my mother saying, I'm going to put a little something aside for you. I said, no, Ma, I'm not going to eat pork anymore. And I made that decision, and I don't think to this very day, and I'm in my 60s, that's been my bent since that time. But to be able to withstand that pressure, because my father, you know, is his household, and, you know, you go by his rules, and he's out there making money, put food on the table, and I don't want to eat no pork. Ain't nothing wrong with pork. Well, my father eventually stopped eating pork later on, too, much later. But the fact that I made that stance and made that commitment, I showed me how much I can change. So, yeah, they were all demonized, and you had certain comments always made that implied that somehow we were crazy people, didn't want to do good. They always try to contrast what we were doing, our stance against Dr. King, as though we thought Dr. King was, you know, not militant enough. There was nothing cowardly about Dr. King to be down south and to be able to go up to Bull Conyers and those people. There was nothing cowardly about that. So we learned later on that there's a lot of false dichotomies that split the black community, and still to this very day, divide and conquer, and character assassination is the way they perceive. So it's no different. And then, in fact, you look at the Black Lives Matter movement now, or the movement for black lives, you see them demonizing them the same kind of way. And all they're doing is standing up to the oppression that happened 50 years ago that gave a rise to the Black Panther Party in Oakland in particular. Mm-hmm. So yeah, the mass media is part and parcel of it, which is a part of the institutional racism we have to deal with, and the media is part of the institutional racism.
Yes, sir. Now, what program, once you joined the Panthers, what service did you render to the community? Were you helping to feed, you know, children, part of the political education classes, the you know, number of survival programs? What was that like when I know you evolved later as you got older and your roles changed, but when you first joined as a 15-year-old, what was you doing?
Well, I started off as the leader of the Black Student Union in Queens and Brooklyn. That was my charge. I was given that responsibility because when I came to the party, I brought my little crew with me. So they saw me as a natural leader. The older guys who were heading up the party, guys like John Thomas, who's no longer with us, Larry Mackwell founded the Jamaica chapter, the Shakur brothers, Lumumba and Zaid, and other brothers like that I've adored and wanted to emulate. So then they saw, you know, you're good at this, you go out and get the black youth and the black students. So that was what I basically started off as, the Black Student Union organizer at the high schools in Queens and stuff. Got arrested a couple of times for trespassing on campus and stuff like that, going to Brooklyn College, CCNY, you know, recruiting students and galvanizing people. And then, you know, when I wasn't doing that, I did work on a free breakfast program in Harlem and the one in Queens. And, you know, and later on, as I moved up the ranks after the Panther 21 was decimated our ranks, I had to take on more responsibilities. And I ended up running the what's known as the East Coast distribution for our paper. We moved the paper and printed from West Coast to the East Coast. And the late Samuel Peel, our circulation manager, came to New York, and he paid me to be his assistant. And that was a great learning experience, a great business learning experience. So I had several hats and several roles as a very young person, and it helped formulate my skills that I have to this very day, just by, you know, being involved with the Panther Party. And you know, all Panthers have to do one thing. You have to read every day. You have to read the paper for their current events. We had the autobiography from Malcolm X was required reading. Man Child and the Promised Land by Claude Brown was required reading. And of course, we read the selected works of Chairman Mao, which I still read to this very day. The Little Red Book is a great book for young people to read just to understand how the world works. And, you know, the Chinese Revolution was a monumental revolution in the history of mankind that should be studied to this very day, especially by black people, if you want to understand how to get your freedom.
Yes, sir. Now let's transition to the upcoming commemoration ceremony that will be held. And again, I want to remind people you can go to the website at naabpp.org. That is www.naa. That's NAAB as in black and PP as in Panther Party. That'll take you to the website of the National Alumni Association of the Black Panther Party. Also on the page today, there is a link to the Indiegogo campaign. And so Mr. Barber, I want to thank you for your service, first of all, and thank you, you know, for sharing those experiences with us. What do you're helping to lead the upcoming commemoration? What are some of the things that y'all have planned, and where is it going to take place?
Well, you know, October 22nd of this year, 2016, will mark the 50th year since the founding of the Black Panther Party by Bobby Seale and Huey Newton in 1966. So we are essentially recognizing and commemorating that event that took place on October 22nd, which, by the way, happens to be Bobby Seale's birthday. And so he'll be 80 years old this October. So he was 30 years old when he joined Huey P. Newton and founded the Black Panther Party in 1966. So the NAABP and other legacy organizations like It's About Time, the Huey P. Newton Foundation, are all amalgamating themselves right together to be able to celebrate what's essentially the golden anniversary of the founding of the party. And since the party was founded in Oakland, that's where we're going to have this monumental event on October, from October 20th to the 23rd of this year. And some of the things we're going to do, for instance, we're going to do something that we think hasn't been done and that's long overdue. We're going to honor Bobby Seale's birthday and also roast him for his contributions over the very year. He's been in very good health. He's, you know, he's aged at 80. You know, you're going to have some kind of difficulties. But we also just want to recognize him for his contribution and the commitment he made to found the party. And so we're going to honor him with that on his birthday on the 22nd. That's going to be one of the kickoff events for this 50th anniversary. But we also have workshops around political prisoners. The one thing that all former Panthers are unanimous about is the fact that we still have close to 15 to 18 former party members who are political prisoners, some who are not as well known as Mumia Abdul-Jabbar or Maroon Shaws, Russell Maroon Shaws. We have Seth Hayes in New York and a whole series of brothers. And in fact, you know, Albert Woodcock just got out of jail a couple of months back after serving 40-some years in solitary confinement just because he was a Black Panther. So we're all on the same page that we've got to raise the consciousness about the political prisoners who, to this very day, are being incarcerated and maintained in prison just because of their political beliefs, not because they necessarily did some horrendous crime. You have people who have done some things, who have got out on parole, and these brothers are not getting out because the PBA, Police Benevolent Association, other right-wing groups, whenever their parole hearings come up or whatever, they go up and they do things to try to stop the parole boards and stuff from even considering their case. And almost across the board, Scott, you'll find that all these brothers who have been confined have an incredible history of service in jail. They help other prisoners. They've got libraries started, like in the case of Eddie Conway, who was incarcerated in Baltimore, was released 2 years ago. If you go to the prison, you see Eddie started a library system. He started a group for men to do counseling. So all these men have made great contributions, even though they've been confined behind these walls. And so you can refer to them as model prisoners in that sense. But they've never forsaken their political beliefs that there's something wrong with this system and it must be changed, and that black people have a right to fight for their freedom and for their emancipation. And no, we're not going to give up on that idea. We still think that, even to this day, that the 10-point program and platform of the Panthers are just as relevant in this day and age as it was almost 50 years ago come this October. So we're going to be celebrating all those things. We're going to be looking at the survival program. In fact, it's about time, under the leadership of William Billy X. Jennings, is giving away some food on that day in commemoration of the free breakfast program and the free food giveaway program. We'll also be celebrating the revolutionary artist Emory Douglas by having exhibits and stuff of his various paintings and drawings and stuff. And then we're going to try to have a mass gathering where we come together with this new generation of freedom fighters and activists, where we actually have a celebration, where we actually pass the torch or the baton, if you will, to this new generation of activists and try to encourage them to stay the course, that sometimes it's going to get, things will get difficult. Sometimes doubt will set in. You're going to have these forces like COINTELPRO, which is still out there working today, trying to undermine you, trying to create dissension. But to hold the line, to stay firm, to believe in yourself, and even though when the dark clouds appear in the sky, there's always a silver lining. And if you keep your mind where you want it and you believe in what you're fighting for, you will prevail. So we think as old heads, they call us our OGs, which for us means original Panthers, not original gangsters, that we want to step up and say, here's the baton. It's you guys' chance now. This is your generation. Take this baton and run with it so that the next generation can carry on this fight. We can continue to the next millennium and make our people, so hopefully our people reach the goal we need to achieve after being in this country and being in this assault for almost 400 some odd years. So this is going to be a monumental event, Scotty. I hope you'll be able to come with us and be there as well.
I would want nothing else, but because of, you know, my duties tied to the station right now, and I'm also in poor health, I'm not able to travel, but I'm definitely going to be there with you in spirit, though. Okay, so
if you'd like to do an on-site interview while we're there with some of the brothers and sisters, you know, we can set that up too.
That would be great. That would be a treat for our listening audience to do live streaming, you know, with some people. So if we could, you know, while the event is going on, we've done things like that in the past on this station. You know, we had a field reporter out there in at the RNC convention about 4 or 5 years ago. There was, you know, big protests up there and whatnot. And so, yeah, we can make that happen. We'd love to make that happen. But I also, before we let you go, Mr. Barber, is that the first time that's publicly been announced? Because, you know, for a few years now, I've been involved in political prisoner work and raising awareness. We actually have a program that's suspended right now because of the host having some personal issues, but we have a program called Political Prisoner Radio. And I know from speaking to many other different activists, former political prisoners, one of the issues that came up, if I may be frank, sir, was that some of the younger activists felt like some of the OGs, as you said, the original Panthers, did not want to pass the baton. And that was a source of friction. So to hear that from you right now just seems to warm my heart. You know, because, you know, with all due respect, not to say that the elders still don't have anything to offer, you know, because many of them are in better health than 30-year-olds and what have you, because they have taken care of themselves, and many like yourself are still active. But what I'm saying is it's time for this new generation. I'll be 50 years old, you know, right after a month later. I'll be 50 years old, and it's time for my generation and those even 20 years behind me, man. It's time for us to pick up where you know, the baton, as you say, and run with it. So I'm excited to hear that.
Yes.
Did you have any thing that you wanted to leave the listeners with in closing, sir?
Well, the NAABP is comprised of the original members of the Black Panther Party and their family members, and we are going to partner with Black Lives Matter, AllHipHop.com, the Million Hoodies Movement for Justice, the Organization for Black Struggle out in St. Louis, and BY100 out in Chicago. We're trying to make sure we bring everybody under one tent and try to come out with some type of position paper that hopefully can become a catalyst that we can put forward as a action plan. And as you know, the national election is going to be right after our convention, our convening in October. Mm-hmm. And this is a very important election. I think this is a seminal election. And I think it's important that we understand what Bernie Sanders has been able to do recently by raising the issues that pertain to what working class people and people of low income means needs to have a champion and need to be able to get their platform and program out there. But we got to turn around this right wing leaning that this country is going into. And, you know, the Black community has always been in the vanguard of this role. I think somehow we have kind of lost that. We got to get back in charge of that. You know, Dr. King already talked about the moral compass and the Black community and the Black people in this country. It's sort of been the moral compass of this country. And I think we want to reclaim that mantra at some point. And I think this election is very key. So not that electoral politics is going to solve all our problems, but it's a means to an end. So I would encourage people to come to this conference. Let's get energized. Let's see if we can take that energy back to our respective communities and get these young people involved so we can try to turn around this particular election. I don't care who the Democratic nominee would may be. We got to make sure that the things that pertain to our survival and our continued existence in this country is looked at. We can't have aid to family-dependent children cut like happened in the Clinton administration. We can't have this mass incarceration. We've got to realize that our survival is actually in our hands, and we've got to take the lead and make sure we understand that and do the things that's going to ensure our survival continue forward in interest of our children and our children's children.
Thank you, Mr. Barber, and you have a great day, sir.
Good talking to you, Scotty, and I hope to be talking to you when we talk from Oakland in October, if not before.
Most certainly, most certainly. Have a blessed day.
And all power to the people.
All right, that was Mr. Barber. All power to the people indeed. 50th anniversary coming up in October, so please make a financial contribution to make sure that, you know, this is a successful event. These things do cost money, all right, and let's make this a success. Even if you can only just chip in $5, it doesn't matter. Every little bit helps, you know. So definitely check out the Indiegogo link. I'm gonna go ahead and share the link by itself on our Facebook page, Black Talk Radio Network. I'm gonna go ahead and share that to make it easier for people to find it that may be listening to the station on different radio streams and what have you. So the Indiegogo link there, where you can make a financial contribution towards the 50th anniversary commemoration events that will be taking place in Oakland in this October, please do so. All right, so that is posted for you there. Year of the Panther, convening for freedom. That'll take you to the page where you can make your contribution. All right, going to take a station identification break, and then when we come back, I'm gonna take a brief look at this article. I'm not gonna spend a whole lot of time on it, just hit the key points, but I'm skeptical about people talking about Black people's DNA has been changed due to slavery, you know, and I especially take issue with people who publish headlines And then these headlines are shared on social media, and that's all people read, and they think that this study actually shows that black people DNA has been mutated, because that's what they're saying, changed by DNA, and that's not actually what the study is saying. The study is putting forth the theory that black people's DNA has been mutated due to slavery, but those were not the conclusive findings. And so, you know, we be sharing this type of stuff, and we're not really using critical thinking to ask questions about these studies. We just assume that just cause people got whatever, you know, acronym behind their names, or they went to this university, you know, we can just trust it. We can just trust it. No. We had to be critical about everything. You think about just 20 years ago, 25 years ago, 75 years ago, 100 years ago, the things that so-called the scientific community or the psychologists and all of that, the things that they believed, you know, at that time. So none of this stuff is concrete, and this particular study does not claim that black people, but they do suggest, they make the suggestion. But it's a, you know, words are important, and more important is understanding the definition of words, I would think. So we'll talk about that on the other side. And then, as people rightly do take a look at Donald Trump's finances and whether or not he's been engaged in fraud through the Trump University, that, yes, you're supposed to vet everybody. Nobody gets a pass. And if he committed fraud, well, you know, the people are suing him, and that's in civil court right now. But if we're going to make that an issue, which it should be, but let's take a look at the fraud of the Clinton family and through the Clinton Foundation, right? Because I'm checking out CNN, Don Lemon on there, you know, bringing on all of them, obviously Clinton surrogates. They're acting like, you know, Bernie Sanders has already dropped out and what have you. They're pivoting towards the general election. And, you know, these supposed to be journalists now, mind you. A lot of them just teleprompter readers, and they speak the words that the producers want them to speak. But I'm watching them talk about this Trump University fraud, and I've been seeing for over a year stories talking about the fraud that was going on at the Clinton Foundation, and how some of it is even connected to her activities as Secretary of State, with donations going to the Clinton Foundation, and then countries that couldn't get weapon deals approved by state. Now these, you know, millions of dollars going to the Clinton Foundation, now your deal gets approved in the short 4 years that Hillary Clinton was there. Come on now, who's talking about that fraud? So we definitely going to make time to listen to this clip of this guy. I can't call his name out. They'll say his name, but he has actually exposed fraud at some other major corporations and what have you. And he's saying that he has painstakingly over a year been digging through the Clinton Foundation records, because remember, this is supposed to be a public charity, right? It's supposed to be a public charity and all that. And so, you know, they're supposed to be filing records. If you take in a certain amount of money as a nonprofit, like Black Talk Media Project, we're a nonprofit, you know, if you're taking in millions of dollars a year, I would even say hundreds of thousands of dollars a year, you know, your reporting requirements are more stricter. You know, it's just certain rules once you get to that level, you know, especially if you got a 501c3 and all of that. Now, in terms of state, then you deal with state regulations if you're only a state, you know, registered nonprofit. But these people have been are being accused of engaging in international fraud, and fraud of the worst kind. Fraud like, you know, talking about they distributing HIV/AIDS medicine in Africa and other parts of the world, and this guy says that there are reports that the medicine has been adulterated, meaning that it's been cut with another substance which would weaken its effectiveness. This kind of medical fraud goes on all the time, right? I mentioned at the top, about Haiti and those activists protesting and talking about how the Clinton Foundation, working with some Haitian leaders, some proxy racist tools to defraud people who donated to help the Haitian people. So definitely want to listen to that. You know, the media is biased. Yes, Donald Trump has to be vetted, but Hillary Clinton, I've said it before and I'll say it again, she is the bigger threat to global humanity than Donald Trump. And that security speech she gave talking about the nuclear codes, that's a repeated talking point that the Clinton people have been using. They repeat the same thing over and over, drill it into you because they've been doing their, you know, studies in the propaganda and how to control, you know, people's thoughts patterns and how they think about something, you know, repetition of words and whatnot. Keep saying it. Even if it's not true, people will believe it's true. The Hitler big lie theory. You know, and so she been talking about nobody wants to see Donald Trump with the nuclear codes to play on your intelligence. And there's a lot of people who are not that informed to think that the president of the United States, the CEO of USA Inc., has these codes in a suitcase that he could just pop open the suitcase, punch these codes in and launch missiles. It don't work that way, people. He had to get congressional approval. It would have to be the only way that scenario plays out if there's a nuclear attack already underway on the United States. Then him and all the Joint Chiefs of Staffs and all of that and all the other people with the codes and the verification codes and all that. But Hillary Clinton just simply, you know, and then people was eating it up. People, I can't wait for this debate. Like, this is freaking entertainment. But you criticize Trump for being an entertainer, a celebrity reality star TV. But then you looking at an election in terms of reality TV, talking about you can't wait till you know, the debate starts. You on Team Clinton and she's right. He would have the nuclear codes. I mean, come on. How simple-minded can you be? It's just a shame, people. And I'm not attacking that person because I understand how media has been used to control their minds. So we'll be back on the other side. You're listening to Black Talk Radio News on the Black Talk Radio Network.
The Black Talk Radio Network is made possible in part with help from the Black Talk Media Project, a North Carolina-based nonprofit engaged in the production and distribution of independent digital black media. Find out more by going to blacktalkradionetwork.com or blacktalkmediaproject.org and look for the menu tab, Crowdfunding Black Media. Black Talk Media Project, helping to provide you with new black media for the new millennium.
You are tuned in to Black Talk Radio, new black media for the new millennium. Welcome back to Black Talk Radio News. If you have any thoughts you would like to share, any observations that you are making, any intelligence that you would like to provide to the listening audience, you could do so giving us a call on the studio line, 704-951-5030. Again, that's 704-951-5030. The conference line is 641-715-3660, participant code 549032#. Hit *61 to come in on air. All right, so this particular article that I want to talk about is titled, this is the headline, "Study Shows DNA of Black People Was Altered Through Slavery." Now, I'm like, wow. And this was written by somebody named Foku Gwen. Now, I'm not even sure if this is some kind of satire site. All right. I'm not sure. I'm not positive. But the quotes and stuff like that, it also has been published in other black blogs, websites, and what have you. "Study shows DNA of black people was altered through slavery." This was published 3 days ago on the 31st. People will constantly say, "Get over it. Slavery was so long ago." However, study shows that the trauma from slavery is passed down in genes of the ancestors of slaves and linked right back, right to black people's DNA. They hurt and pain is real. So right there, the grammatical errors, because they didn't use spell check or anything like that, should give you a clue that this is not somebody who's taking writing seriously. Okay. According to Black Matter US something, researchers, and I'm gonna go ahead and see if I can find the original source of this. I'm not gonna keep going and reading that. So this has come up in blackmattersus.com. this is also posted to Facebook on Ear Hustle 411. Those are the only places I'm finding this. Let's go and see if Black Matters USA US or blackmattersus.com is actually going to point us to another source for the study, like to the actual university or paper publishing it. And I'm not seeing such links. So red flags right there. Let me go ahead and read the blackmattersus.com, since they say that this is the source, and they basically copied and pasted the whole thing. DNA of black people altered through slavery. A study conducted on survivors of the Jewish Holocaust shows that trauma of slavery is transferred through DNA from generation to generation. So what's that, a typo? Now, before you say, well, I didn't know Jews were enslaved, they actually, yes, Hitler used slave labor. They, just didn't round up them people and kill them. We played the clip the other day, last Tuesday, when we did our thing about, the American roots of Nazis and Nazism and what have you. All of those programs the Nazis was running and whatnot, they was doing it. And so they were practicing, prison slavery here long before Hitler and the Nazis set up their work camps and whatnot. Again, they studied America a lot and saw how much America was getting away with. The white folks here, the racists, the white supremacists was getting away with the mistreatment of black people and non-white people and getting away with it and never paid for it ever, still to this day. And so I guess Hitler and the Nazis thought, well, damn, we can get away with this stuff too. We can get away with it too. We can mistreat people. We can turn them into prison slaves. We can slaughter them and take their possessions and their land and all that. Now, hell, they was getting help from American businessmen. So, some Jews were briefly held in slavery during that time period in Germany. So, but y'all know that ain't what we talking about, though. Now, Holocaust victims, some of them still alive, and their so-called descendants would only be into one or maybe two more generations, their kids and their grandkids. And so they passing that trauma down word of mouth by telling them what happened to them. I don't know. I had to look at that. They trying to say that this is passed down by the DNA, but let me read this article. Researchers believe that the DNA of black people may have been altered through hundreds of years of slavery. See, there's a key right there, the words. Researchers believe. Not researchers have found that the DNA of black people. No, researchers believe that the DNA of black people may have been altered, not has been altered. But yet we believe this stuff without paying attention to the words. See, that's what have people signing in, getting themselves into bad contracts and whatnot, credit cards, mortgages, and stuff like that. They're not reading. The group says that certain just genetic identifiers of blacks are altered by a deeply distressing experience their ancestors faced hundreds of years ago. Look, it wasn't no hundreds of years ago. Again, y'all know my position. Slavery has never been abolished. It's just in a different form and format. That's all. Never stopped. never passed a single law or document abolishing slavery in all its forms once and for all. No, they reserve it to put you into slavery if you break one of their so-called laws, many of which are unjust. So the group says that these certain genetic identifiers of blacks are altered by a deeply distressing experience faced hundreds of years ago. How about yesterday? How about last week? You don't think black folks is facing distressing experiences today? Of course we know. That's why there are groups out there and people organizing against it. That's why you got young people out there saying black lives matter. We demand, we're telling you they matter, they, it matters, because you're treating us like we don't matter. So we're boldly declaring it do matter, and now we're going to put in the work to make our lives matter. We're going to speak that to be as though it were, even though we haven't seen the physical manifestation of it yet. But we're going to sow the seeds and we're going to put the work in and make the black lives matter. But it wouldn't exist if black lives did matter, right? They wouldn't have been a movement for that. You don't think black people are being distressed by seeing all these snuff films of black people getting snuffed out by cops? You don't think young people was distressed and traumatized by watching Laquan McDonald in the middle of the street walking away from cops getting just shot up like a pinata or something? Like, you know, he wasn't even human. Like, he was just an animal to be used for this man's target practice and pleasure and what have you. Words matter, man. This stuff matter. A lot of black people today have what? Diabetes and other stress-related, high blood pressure, other stress-related disorders that also have to do with health. Also, I mean, not health, but diet. Look at the food, the crappy food that a lot of poor people are forced to eat. That cause, you know, stress. Poverty causes stress. So I'm not believing that, you know, 150 years ago, an ancestor who was enslaved, they got out of slavery, they had children, whatnot, and they passed this on genetically to their grandchildren and great-grandchildren. I think we're only like three generations removed from 1865. It's not that long ago. People won't talk about it. It was hundreds of years ago. Just three generations ago. Three short generations ago. Since the Civil War. That did not end slavery. The soldiers was wanting to end it, but they got betrayed by the great deceiver Abraham Lincoln. So again, this is why I'm saying, did they screen out for any of that? And here's the big thing too, to me, who's to say, who keep claiming that all black people is the descendant of enslaved Africans? And I don't say that as they're, I don't mean to say that like there's some shame to being a descendant of an enslaved African. But prior to the census, prior to 1865, I think it was 1855, showed a population of 500,000 free black people. This is prior to 1865, just 10 years prior to, you know, the 13th Amendment being passed, which changed slavery to prison slavery. Chattel slavery to prison slavery. Still chattel, they still looked at as property. But, you know, how did they know that some of these people when they study weren't the descendants of free black people? Did they, you know, do a DNA search on they, you know, to make sure that they was enslaved, descendants of enslaved Africans? Again, there is an agenda. There is a propaganda program that is ongoing to convince black people, every U.S. born black person, that they all are descendants of enslaved Africans. Because, see, when you believe that, then you will not claim your heritage of settling this continent, of being, you know, world travelers, explorers. And coming here, and again, I've talked about the American Revolutionary War, how the black, free black, and enslaved African, without them, you know, this would still be a British colony, who knows, would look totally different. So who's to say what black person is the descendant of an enslaved African? Half a million people free in 1855. That's a lot of people. But they could pass on trauma through the white supremacist codes that was enacted with the slave codes, stripping black people of their rights. Couldn't strike a white person who struck you first. White man slapped the shit out your wife. You couldn't do nothing about it. You better not dare put your hands on him or you get lynched and all of that. Stress. See, you don't have to actually have a slave status to be traumatized and mistreated and all of that. So again, this is what the study said. They did, let me get to some of it. They was talking about this particular gene. They said the FKBP 5 gene of black children. I mean, I'm already thinking that. What does FKBP mean? F black people, 5 times gene. I don't know. I'm being silly. Let me stop being silly. FKBP 5 gene of black children, which contributes to risk for depression and PTSD. And saying that there was a change in the same spot on a stress-related gene. An epigenetic change between black and white people. Rochelle Yehuda, a professor of psychiatry and neuroscience at the ICHN School of Medicine. Let me do a search on this and see if this is actually a real institution. There is a ICHN School of Medicine at Mount Sinai, which is in New York, in the borough of Manhattan. So that must be the one that they are talking about. So I'll look later. I don't have time today to see if on their website they talking about this study or anything like that. But epigenetic, what does that mean? Well, that's what they got the dictionary for. Relating to or arising from non-genetic influence on gene expression. So they're saying external influence like terrorism, like beatings, like rape, like lynchings, like slavery, you know, all of that. That's external factors that they're saying changes your genes, but except for they're not saying the gene was changed. They're saying that there was some kind of chemical around the gene that shows some kind of difference. But again, how do we know this ain't stress from the everyday life of black people? We don't know. So, you know, I'm very skeptical. I'm asking questions. I'm not one to sit up there and latch on to every headline and every study and accept it as gospel truth if it you know, doesn't seem logical to me. And then again, this is all a theory. They think, they believe, they don't know. All I'm saying, people, is ask questions. All right, I'm gonna take another station identification break. Before I do that, I see the caller on the phone line. Let me take this station identification break, and then when I come back, we'll get your call. You're listening to Black Talk Radio News, broadcasting on the Black Talk Radio Network, providing you with new black media for this new millennium.
No, I'm not a writer.
Okay.
Black Talk Radio, since 2008, providing new black media for the masses.
Wouldn't it be crazy? Just
And welcome back to Black Talk Radio News. Do want to remind you of the Black Media crowdfunding campaign ongoing. You can contribute to the North Carolina-based nonprofit Black Talk Media Project, which established, built the Black Talk Radio Network platform, helped a number of people launch their own digital radio platforms and what have you. So if you want to make a contribution, if you give a contribution of $25 or more, you of course will get the Black Radio Stations Matter t-shirt, sizes from medium all the way to extra, extra large. So this network isn't going to, you know, sustain itself, and the new networks are not going to get built without us all taking part in making sure that that happens. So either go to blacktalkmediaproject.org or blacktalkradionetwork.com. You will see the banners or how you can make a donation and get a thank you t-shirt in return that says Black Radio Stations Matter. All right, welcome back. We had a call right before we took the went to break. Let's go ahead and get that call. Area code 754. Thank you for giving us a call. Share your thoughts with us.
Hey, what's going on, Scotty? It's Sam from South Florida.
Greetings to you, brother. How are you today?
I'm doing pretty good. Enjoying the commentary.
Thank you. What's on your mind?
I'm just listening, and I just wanted to call and tell you about what I heard about epigenetics. Professor, I'm not sure if it's doctor or professor, DeGruy.
Yes.
And she was on Time for Awakening once before. She was speaking on, about epigenetics and, with the mice and the experiment, the version of peppermint and stuff like that. So by the data and the studies and stuff like that, I do believe that, epigenetics, it is a true thing, and it has happened. It's happening. And I do believe that, there are all kind of there are all kind of mutations, as far as in our bloodline, in our DNA. Albinism, if I'm not mistaken, is a mutation. But as far as it seems like what they were stating, the crux of it is like we were changed, we were mutated into something else. Like we're not black people anymore, something like that.
Or we're mutated black people.
Yeah, that's further from the truth. If anything, it made us even blacker. It made us take on all kind of nonsense, lose our identity, just to be at this point gathering it back in a strong way, putting together what we went through plus what we are, and just bringing it together. So I don't see it as changing us. It hasn't changed us. I'm talking about I ain't seen it.
Not on a genetic level. Not on a genetic level. You know, your body will start producing certain types of chemicals as a result of different external stimuli. Okay?
Right.
You may produce, like when you're in fear, you'll produce more insulin. When you're playing sports, that insulin got you all dragged up. Those are all chemical changes and whatnot. And so I'm sure that if you living under stress, you have highly stressful jobs or anything like that, or you live under oppressive conditions, I bet you if you go to Palestine and you did the same study on this particular gene, you'll find similar effects.
Oh, definitely.
But they weren't never enslaved, though. They just simply been oppressed and living under constant oppression, genocide, and what have you. I bet you will find it among Native Americans.
Heck, I bet you will find it among European Americans. I know you will find it among them because I was just hearing it. They're not grown up all the way. They haven't fully matured. I ascribe to that. I believe that they're not mature humans. They haven't matured all the way. So, in their prematureness, they got to be stuff. They have mutations from going through stress and all that type of stuff. I believe that all of us are, every group of people, they have, if that's the case, they have that type of mutation from going through stress. Not, as you said, not on a genetic level, but on, as far as adrenaline levels raising and dropping, stuff like that, and other chemicals. chemical imbalances and things like that. I believe that.
I mean, but they're saying, though, they're admitting that they believe that external pressures, like, for example, let me read this. They mentioned Dr. Joy DeGruy. Dr. Joy DeGruy Leary, author of Post-Traumatic Slave Syndrome, said that because black people were traumatized directly, saw friends, cousins, and around being beaten, sold away from family, raped, mutilated, it is not plausible that they escaped stress-related illnesses. Well, I would say to you also that non-enslaved black people who sat around and saw all that kind of stuff, because I remember my great aunt telling my mother and them a story about the enslaved Africans in our area. See, our family was never enslaved, but the enslaved Africans in our area said that the white people were still practicing terrorism, and they cut off a slave's head and put it on a buggy, a horse-drawn buggy, because, you know, they were still dirt roads back then, and rolled this buggy up and down the street with this enslaved African's head chopped off on the doggone buggy. Now, you think that didn't stress out my aunt and them and other black people who saw that kind of terrorism, even though they was never enslaved?
Right. And you're right. And that's the type of thing that's passed on. That happens in small degrees as well.
Right, so I'm just saying that it's just too much external factors. You can't isolate for certain control factors and what have you. Again, what if they not in the descendants of enslaved Africans? How do you explain it then?
We can explain it because we know it doesn't just come from, you know, like you said, it's not just slavery. It's
terrorism, period, against black people, all black life.
Right. So if that's the case, we the most mutated. We don't went through the most.
Now, they're only talking about this one gene that shows a small change on the spot related to stress. Well, if this is a stress-related gene, if we're currently living in a stressful situation, then you cannot come to any kind of scientific conclusions. You can't isolate it. So, again, this is why they're using words like we believe, we think, you know.
It's a theory,
exactly. And there's nothing wrong with theories, because theories put you on the path to finding the answers to the question.
But when you push that theory as if it is actual truth, that's when you hurt the people that
right,
you know, hear it and won't research it. You know what I'm saying? And I think because when I heard you reading it and just the way they use the words, yeah, we know we believe. That's somebody saying, you know, this is what they believe. You know, it's a strong opinion.
Yeah, possibility happened. Yeah, it's possible that this is the cause of this factor, that factor. So we believe.
Right, but when you put that in the form of a conversational and commentary, or you reading it, and what is it called? Reading comprehension. When you putting it in like that. Everybody not going. People gonna hear it and be like, "Oh!" And their minds are gonna run with it. Like, I think that might be true. When, as you say, nothing could be further from the truth. It's just somebody or a group of people is just their thoughts of their opinion. You know what I mean? It can't be pushed out there like that. And if it is, it gotta be people out there to knock it down. Because, nah, I do not ascribe to that. Period. That don't even. that's. I was kind of chuckling to myself as I said, because it just don't sound right. It sounds like somebody thought they want to be true. But, you know, as I said, just listening in, man, I'm enjoying the news. It's all the real news I get throughout the day, so I'm enjoying the news, man.
Thank you, man, and we appreciate your support of the network. And so let me move on to this next story, man. And if you want to chime in again, just hit *6 and 1. But I want to talk about Hillary Clinton before I go off air.
I know that's right. All right, I'm going to back over and get on the listen on the line. Thanks, guys.
All right, peace.
Q&A queue is cleared.
All right, so again, you know, I'm not saying that I'm not trying to say these people are purposely engaging in the fraud. The only ones I see as engaging in the fraud is the ones that's putting headlines out there as if this is conclusively conclusive findings in a scientific study when you look at the words of the researchers themselves, and they are saying we believe and we think and you know, based on these factors here. But you know, that leaves room for other explanations. So the only reason, you know, what I'm attempting to do is just get people to get into the habit of critical thinking and paying attention to the words and knowing the definitions of those words and to ask questions. So I want to move on to this report. We're going to listen to it's 12 minutes long, but we're not going to listen to all 12 minutes. We only going to listen to about half of it. Again, Donald Trump is being sued right now. It's in the civil courts and what have you for Trump University, claiming that the university was a fraud and all of that. And, you know, the mainstream media is paying a whole lot of attention to that. Donald Trump is calling out the judge, saying he's of Mexican descent. Mexican nationality or whatever. I don't know what he means by Mexican descent, because a Mexican ain't a racial classification. It's a nationality, meaning that they are citizens of a particular country and identify with that country. I know what he meant. But anyway, let's be correct in our word usage. But anyway, he going after him saying, you know, this guy's Hispanic and so he's biased against me and all that. So everybody focused on that. Obviously, most of the corporate media is trying to help Hillary Clinton get in there because she's shown she's willing to kill, you know, a whole bunch of innocent people in the name of American imperialism, in the name of corporatism, in the name of just all things God evil. Okay, so she's shown that. So the system, the establishment, you know, the movers and shakers, the shadow government, they want Hillary to be the CEO of USA Inc. over and above Trump, because they know she will carry out their orders faithfully without question. She has no moral. She's shown to have no moral conscience or anything. So, you know, but if you're going to focus on Donald Trump's fraud, what about the fraud of the Clinton Foundation? You know, have y'all been seeing a whole lot of mainstream report now? This particular, what is this, One America News? Now, they are on the cable channel, but they're not as well known, not as big as CNN or even Fox News or MSNBC. But OAN is at least in our cable directory. And I have tuned into their network and what have you. So this is a program on the OAN network called Tip Point with Liz Wheeler. And they talk about, and this report actually came out 2 weeks ago, and you've heard nothing from CNN. Don Lemon didn't bring it up when he was talking about Donald Trump's alleged fraud the other night. Haven't heard Christopher Hayes on MSNBC bring it up. Definitely ain't going to hear Rachel Maddow bring it up. So let's go ahead and listen to what he's calling this whistleblower, this guy who spent a year combing through the financial records of the nonprofit 501c3 NGO Clinton Foundation. He saying he may have uncovered $100 million fraud going on. It's been going on for over a decade.
Our next guest is a known whistleblower, a financial analyst who's exposed some of the largest corporations in our nation for financial discrepancies, and that's putting it nicely. This man was responsible for exposing General Electric, AIG, and now he's aiming higher, alleging a bombshell analysis, charity fraud, he describes it, at the Bill, Hillary, and Chelsea Clinton Foundation. Take a look.
Everywhere in the world where there is real progress, you find creative networks of cooperation. The non-governmental organization is the instrument through which people of goodwill and passion can change the course of the future. And you cannot refuse to do anything just because you can't do everything.
We're all citizens of this world. Let's build a better future together.
Joining me now is Wall Street analyst Charles Ortel. Charles, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me on, Liz. Appreciate it.
All right, sir. This is not the first time that you've uncovered financial discrepancies. You had General Electric, you had AIG. Now you say you found some cash flow discrepancies with the Clinton Foundation. Tell us, what did you find?
Well, all public charities, and that's what the Clinton Foundation started out as being. It started out being simply a library and archive based in Little Rock, and that was its sole tax-exempt purpose. All public charities whose revenues exceed a certain number, it depends state by state, have to provide each year an independent certified set of financial statements that is called a professional audit. The Clinton Foundation, since inception on October 23, 1997, has tendered into the public domain documents that purport to be audits, but they're not audits. They're not compliant with the actual tough regulations that exist in places like your state, California, my state, New York, and around the world. And when you start pulling beneath the surface and looking at the actual financial statements and cross-checking them, these financial statements can readily be cross-checked. There shouldn't be discrepancies. They can be cross-checked for the foundation alone, and they can be cross-checked for their disclosures against the disclosures of charities that say they gave amounts to the Clinton Foundation. For the last 15 months, I've been doing that type of painstaking work, and the discrepancies in the numbers that we see run in the many hundreds of millions of dollars.
Okay, well, let me ask you this first before we even get into the nitty-gritty of the independent audits and what laws they might be breaking there. How do you know? You say you've been analyzing this for 15 months. What kind of access to records do you have, and what records are you looking at to determine this?
All right, well, that's a good question. So the starting place for the Clinton Foundation, for the people who don't know better, is to look at their own website. And there they put up information, financial reports that go back to 1998, but audits that start in 2004. So in the beginning, there's a bunch of missing information. The versions that they put up on their website are very different, materially different, from the versions that you can find by looking in the states where they have operated inside the United States and outside the United States in online databases that are freely accessible. The second thing you could cross-check are press releases issued by the Clinton Foundation and others at the time that these major donations and grants are made. The third thing you can check, which I've checked, are after-action audit reports. The big governments that give money away have had troubles. So, for example, the government of Norway, the government of Australia, the government of Canada, the government of Ireland, the government of the UK. Each of these organizations and multilateral organizations will do special reports on a country, the progress in a country, and they contain extensive reports that don't foot. But the biggest place to start is with the largest donor, and the largest donor to the Clinton Foundation is a name very few people know. It's called Unitaid. Out of the $2 billion in declared contributions, which may or may not, and most likely are not the total amount of money sent towards the Clinton Foundation, of that $2 billion, $600 million came from one organization based in Switzerland.
All right, so this lack of independent audits then that the Clinton Foundation almost fudged to make it look like they did conduct. If they didn't conduct them, as you found, what laws does this violate? Does that violate local law, state law, federal law, charity law? What does that violate?
All right. The principal law that it violates is charity fraud solicitation law. This is a charity that, while we're on this broadcast, is raising money over the internet. It may be using the phones to do it. It may be using the mails. And it's doing this broadly to the public. So when you engage in that type of behavior, your forms, all your filings have to be true and accurate. There's special laws that apply to charities. Charities may not engage in, quote, any illegal activity. So all these forms have to be accurate. They are not accurate. They are raising money. And worse, they are engaged in disaster relief. After the various disasters, 9/11, Katrina, and the frauds that happen, Americans and others are very generous people. We see a disaster, money flows towards a charity. After disasters were exposed starting in 2001, the federal government tightened the sentencing guidelines, the FBI did, for disaster relief charity fraud. And these people are engaged in disaster relief charity fraud. So the penalties for that, and mind you, it's not like Peter Schweitzer's book. You don't have to prove quid pro quo. All you have to show is they are soliciting, which they admit, and that their forms and filings are materially false and misleading, which I believe they are.
So you consider this to be charity fraud then?
Absolutely. It is an epic charity fraud. And what I would say is it's much bigger than $2 billion. Bill Clinton and others around Bill Clinton have been associated with related charities, and they should have been disclosing their related charity involvements. They haven't been. One of them is the American India Foundation. That, I believe, is a $1 billion fraud. There's the operation in Haiti. That's about a $12 to a $13 billion fraud. There's the operation called the Global Fund, which is in the many tens of billions of dollars of fraud involving disgraced convicted felon Rajat Gupta, former head of McKinsey. That's something that started in 2000, I think, two or three. The piece of the Clinton Foundation that Bill takes a lot of credit for, and Hillary and Chelsea distributing HIV/AIDS medicines around the world, that's a fraud. And there are serious questions about whether the medicines that have been delivered around the world are actually genuine and lawfully produced and effective medicines, or whether they may have been adulterated. I mean, there are very serious questions about this fraud that have been raised by some for years, but only recently, and really in the last 15 months, have I decided to take this kind of effort, because I've done the type of painstaking work. I've approached government authorities last year, several of them, and nothing has happened yet. So I decided, you know, enough is enough. People are being harmed here. The public has a right to know about this, and the public needs to rise up and shut this thing down.
Right. Why not? Why do these government officials ignore this? Because it sounds to me like this is a smoking gun story. This is uncovering an enormous case of charity fraud. It seems to warrant an investigation, if nothing else. Is this a Justice Department matter?
No. You see, for charity fraud, the ways in which charity frauds generally start out getting disciplined at state level, and the states that have the highest income tax rates tend to be, with some exceptions, controlled by Democrats. Even if the states are controlled by Republicans, the regulatory apparatus very frequently is influenced by Democrats. So the state apparatuses so far have not risen up and done their job. The federal IRS, I mean, after all, the IRS chief right now, the House is trying to justifiably impeach him. We know what Lois Lerner did. She ran the department, or it's alleged that she did. She ran the department that oversees charities federally, and foreign governments are shy to take this on because they reason that if the U.S. isn't going to take it on, why should they?
All right, so you said that this is a report.
All right, we're going to stop it right there again. All right, I hate to bring his name into it, but we have to bring black folks is involved in this cover-up and this lack of justice that is occurring in the system and what have you. Obama, where you at? Why are you covering for this woman, even though she throwing your administration under the bus after the attorney, the inspector general of your Secretary of State did the investigation and said that this woman was running a rogue email operation, and she basically saying that y'all lying on her and what have you. Where's Loretta Lynch? Where is the Justice Department? FBI criminal investigation still ongoing, and some people are speculating this is why it's taking so long, that it is not just her activities with an email server, but it's also her activities with the Clinton Foundation. And so are some of those 30,000 emails that the FBI had to recover after an attempt to wipe the server that she joked about, reveal information about the coordination of weapons deals at the State Department with her approval and donations to the Clinton Foundation fraud. Not seeing CNN or anybody really focus on that. No, the boogeyman is Donald Trump. Donald Trump. Everybody focuses on, oh, Donald Trump must be stopped. Donald Trump, it will be disastrous, when nothing but disaster has followed the Clintons ever since they arrived on the national scene. And all they have to do is apologize and you're going to trust them again. And then all this ongoing criminality through the Clinton Foundation harming folks. Here's a clip of the Haitians who were, you heard that mention there, protesting outside of Hillary Clinton's office over the billions stolen by the Clinton Foundation. Let's go ahead and get at a listen.
Haitian activists stage a protest outside Hillary Clinton's Manhattan office. The demonstrators claim billions of dollars were stolen through the Haiti Reconstruction Commission headed by Bill Clinton. They also say Haiti was used as a cover for foreign governments to funnel kickbacks of possibly hundreds of millions of dollars through the Clinton Foundation. They say it was done in exchange for favors that Hillary was doing for them as Secretary of State. They say they want their message to get out so Americans won't vote for her if she runs for president.
We are telling the world of the crimes that Bill and Hillary Clinton are responsible for in Haiti, and we are telling the American people that the over 32,000 emails that Hillary Clinton said she deleted have evidence of the crimes they've committed.
The demonstrators staged a rally in front of Bill Clinton's office in Harlem in January.
All right, so for all you people that want, oh, these are all right-wing conspiracies and you know, these are the Republicans and the scary conservatives all about that. Look at Donald Trump. He wanted to build a wall and all that. When this woman and her criminal crime family, you know, have been engaged in money laundering, weapons, you know, sales to despotic regimes and ripping off people like the Haitians in need. These Haitians ain't in the Republican Party. These ain't Republicans. These ain't conservatives. These ain't members of the Tea Party or nothing. These is black folks. These are Haitians who telling you what the Clintons did. And again, I understand why so many black people voted for Hillary Clinton in the primaries, because you had Steve Harvey telling you to, you had Tom Joyner telling you to, you got Don Lemon telling you to, you got, you know, all these other black surrogates, black proxy tools of racism out there telling you to vote for this woman. Maybe even your pastor brought this woman up in the church, brought a devil up in the church to tell lies in the pulpit, to defile the sanctuary and whatnot. So, but I understand the masses of black voters being misinformed, because I mean, I can just go back to the 1996 Telecommunication Act, which started the death of black radio, black independent media, and what have you. And if you a black person and you want to survive in the media, you got to sell out. If you want to get them ad dollars from Coca-Cola, from Walmart, from you know, Pfizer, from Merrill Lynch, from Wells Fargo, all that, man, you can't be talking about modern day slavery and private prisons and, you know, all of this kind of stuff. So I know why the majority of the black voter cast a vote for this woman. But again, at the same time, I can't make too many excuses now. The young people ain't fooled. The 40 and under have not been supporting her, but it's the older heads. Being an elder does not make you wise. Some of these people hear these things and they just act like, oh, it's all right-wing conspiracies with no research of their own, anything like that. And they just accept the corruption, man. Some of them wouldn't care. They have become so accustomed to this is the way politics work. All politicians do it. So therefore, you know, we should just accept that there's going to be some level of corruption. How you know, most young people, they haven't been tainted by all this corruption and accepting it and whatnot. They still believe that there is a chance to implement a system based on justice. So that's why you see, you know, so many of them supporting a certain person over another one, not really supporting the person, but supporting the platform and the things on that platform that would bring relief to so many people. But the old heads, it seemed like many of them, again, they listening to the Steve Harveys and the Tom Joyners and John Lewis's and all that. I mean, any person right now that's endorsing Hillary Clinton with all of this, you have to figure there's one or two things. They either sold out and they just as corrupt, and they're actually part and parcel to a party to the conspiracy to help this woman get away with her crimes, or their judgment is just so bad that they need to be voted out of office. John Lewis need to go. He got to go, man. He got to go. And any black politician that's endorsing this woman, Cory Booker, you got to go, man. Because you are showing that you are compromised. You're willing to look the other way. And why should we settle for people like that? I don't blame the young people for not having respect for those type of so-called elders. No, man, they engaged in too much foolishness. Anyway, that's all I got for you today. Just ask questions, pay attention to the words. If you don't know the definition of a word, look it up. Don't allow any type of media get you to engage in things and without gathering all the information yourself independently. Question everything, man. Just question. All right. Hope that you again will support the National Alumni Association of the Black Panther Party, again with the 50th anniversary, the golden anniversary, the commemoration events that will be taking place in Oakland, California, kicking it off with a birthday celebration for Bobby Seale, one of the founders, and concluding with an effort to pass the baton on to a new generation of activists to fight against this system of slavery. Recognize the fact that you do live behind the enemy lines of USA Inc. There are slave catchers lurking on every corner in some of these areas, and you just have to be careful, and you have to be practice what I call defensive living. Don't make it easy for the slave catcher. That said, I will be back on air Monday. Live programming coming up today, 6 o'clock. Tando radio show will be on air. I think at 9 o'clock will be Race Treaty. I'm sure Race Treaty will be on. I've been talking to Brother Anaje. And then the Lotus Place will round up the night's live streaming here on Black Talk Radio Network. Make sure that you invite others and share the network so that we can put as much as this independently produced black media in front of the black masses as possible. We need your help. Just clicking that share button on your social networking pages really does help. So thank you. Peace and blessings to all.